Welcome to the MSS edition of Treasures Old and New from ART. I'm Joy Jackson. My first show is an original. It's called Librarian's Aid, written by Kay Lutz, one of ART's members. It explores a kind of library service and what happens when someone stumbles upon their own personalized cosmic plan. Repercussions could be major.
The Delphic Oracle is believed to be the true source of the philosophical imperative, Know Thyself. We meditate, contemplate, speculate, congregate, and cogitate in our lifelong quest to understand who and what we really are. We question our purpose and our direction, often without understanding the choices or the ultimate answers. What if there were a simpler way to gain that elusive self-knowledge? What if you stumbled on your own personalized cosmic plan? Listen now to American Radio Theater's original production of The Librarian's Aid, by Kay Lutz.
Before we start our meeting with scones and tea and with coffee, Mr. Keating, I would like to introduce the newest member of the library staff, Librarian's Aide, Third Class Sandra Shore.
Hey, nice to meet you.
Sandy Shore, you have a brother named Rocky?
Jules Wilson, please do not give Miss Shore a poor first impression of our staff here at the library.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Bradley, but you have to admit...
Jules.
My apologies, Miss Shore.
It's okay. I get it all the time, even from my brother.
He's not actually...
No. His name's Pete. He's...
Yes. Well, welcome to the library staff. Let's get on with the meeting, shall we? Jules, you can show Miss Shore around the stacks and go over her duties with her after the meeting.
Yes, ma'am.
Now, most of you no doubt have already heard of the tragic apartment fire Saturday night. Nearly 24 people were lost, including many children. This means a lot of work for us, recycling the autobiographies.
Recycling books?
Yeah, we do that a lot, especially when kids die.
We'll need to get the shelves cleared by this evening, if at all.
I'll explain later.
Any questions?
What kind of library is this?
What was that, Miss Shore?
Oh, nothing.
We'll have no unnecessary talking in the library, Miss Shore.
Sorry, Mrs. Bradley.
Very well. Mr. Keating, unless there's something else, will you get our librarian's aide started on the day's work?
Right away, Mrs. Bradley. Come along, Mr. Wilson, Miss Shore. We'll start in the children's section.
But the scones!
There's a lot to do, so no dawdling.
Our job, see, is to remove all the books with these red X's on their spines, like this one.
Why? What's wrong with them?
Nothing's really wrong with them, Sandy, but they're no longer possible.
I don't understand. You don't get rid of books because they're not possible.
Well, this is a different kind of library than the one in your school. It's not open to the public.
Some sort of personal research library?
Sort of, but it's more complicated than that. You see, each book in our library is an autobiography, kind of.
But these are all autobiographies of Taylor Jennings. Why do you have so many copies? There must be hundreds.
The thing is, they're not identical copies. These books are possible autobiographies, each one based on the results of a major life decision.
I don't get it.
Okay, just for example, this book is when Taylor decides to go to medical school and become a doctor. And this book is her autobiography when she decides to become an opera singer instead.
But both of them had an X on the spine.
Yeah, just like the rest of these books about Taylor. She died in that apartment fire, Sandy, so she'll never live to make any of those decisions. So none of these autobiographies are possible, except this one.
It's such a thin book.
And it's the only book about Taylor that doesn't have an X on it. This is her autobiography when she dies in an apartment fire, and she's only 4.5 years old.
Oh, that's really sad. Any of those books could have been her life if there'd been no fire?
Well, ultimately, everyone ends up with only one book. When you die, you're out of choices, so there's only one book left, and that one ends up in the archives.
Oh, wow. This is a very depressing place to work. I'm not sure I'm going to like this job, recycling people's lives.
Oh, you get used to it after a while. People make choices. Their lives change. The unrealized autobiographies get recycled.
Still?
Sometimes it's actually fun. Over in the senior section, we've still got 23 autobiographies for Eugenia Willoughby.
So?
Well, Eugenia is 102 years old, and she's still got some major life decisions ahead of her. We've got an office poll going as to when she gets down to her last two books.
A pool?
Yeah. For a dollar, you can pick a date for when her antepenultimate book gets the X. Some people are playing side games, betting on which two books will be left, but that's too rich for my blood.
Gambling? In a library? I'm shocked.
Oh, it's okay. It's just a friendly way to pass time. No harm done to anyone. Just don't tell Mrs. Bradley, right? Could get Mr. Keating in trouble.
So, Jules, are your autobiographies in here? Are mine?
Nah, that wouldn't be allowed now, would it? Imagine the trouble reading your own autobiographies could cause.
But you could see which life turns out the best.
I don't know. I don't think it works that way. Anyways, our autobiographies aren't in here, so it's a moot point.
But what's the point of them being here at all, then?
Well, I told you that it was like a research library, right?
Yeah.
So, right, it's a research library for the Guardians.
Who?
See those people over there at the tables with the piles of books?
Yeah.
Well, those are some of our circle of Guardians. Guardians Gamma, Mu, Iota, Lambda, and Guardian Psi.
I heard that.
Fun to tease that one. They're here all the time. Well, until we close for the night anyway. They're studying the autobiographies so they can help the clients assigned to them.
They're like social workers?
Kinda. They do complain about the low pay and the impossible caseloads, and they drink our free coffee like it's going out of style. They spend hours studying the books.
Why?
I don't know specifics, mind you, but I think their job is to help their clients through their lives.
How?
Well, you know how people talk about having guardian angels? Or getting a strong gut feeling about something? Some unexpectedly insightful advice from a stranger? That's the guardians at work. They try to help their clients make the best long-term decisions.
Every decision?
No, of course not. We wouldn't have room for all the books. We're not talking decisions like, should I have vanilla ice cream or chocolate? We're talking things like, do I steal that ice cream? You know, decisions that influence what kind of person you'll be, honest or dishonest, kind or cruel.
And so, until you make that decision, there are two sets of books. And one set gets marked with an X after the decision is made.
In a nutshell.
And it's our job to recycle the books about the choices they didn't make.
Yep. And all the books with the choices they didn't get a chance to make. Like little Taylor.
So, what happens to the books?
We collect them all, and then Mr. Keating scans them. Kind of like checking out books at a public library. Except he's removing them from the system. People's lives are linked, see? And choices one person makes can make a difference for someone else. Like for Taylor. Not only has she lost her choice to train for opera, but because she doesn't go to music school, she never meets Catherine there. So Catherine won't have the chance to fall in love with her. When we scan the books here, it lets the whole system know all across the world. And some of Catherine's autobiographies will get red X's on them.
Wow, that's amazing.
Isn't it? Mr. Keating's going to teach me how to use the scanner once I get you trained.
Aide?
Yes, Guardian?
I'm done with these books for now. Reshelve them for me, would you?
Of course, Guardian.
Thank you.
As if we weren't busy enough today.
So, Jules, do you ever read any of these books?
Of course not. These books are only for the Guardians. It's against all the rules for anyone else to read these books. Even the chief librarian, Mrs. Bradley. Don't ever let anyone catch you even opening one of these books.
Oh.
And besides, most of them are boring as cold rice.
Oh, nuts! Oh, as if my caseload wasn't bad enough. Now the books are all mixed up. How am I going to get all my research done before the library closes? Oh, nuts!
Shh!
Who are you?
I'm Librarian's Aide Third Class, Sandra Shore.
Well, I'm Guardian Mu. Librarians' aides don't shush guardians, Miss Shaw.
I'm sorry, Guardian Moo.
You're new here?
Yes, I just started a week ago. Still learning the ropes.
Well, one of the ropes is this. The guardian is always right.
Of course. I apologize, guardian.
No, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have snapped at you. I'm just so far behind. That is no reason to take it out on you. This is a library, after all. Shh happens.
I wish I'd thought of that. So, how can I help you?
How long until the library closes?
About 15 minutes. What do you need?
Well, I need to check these books out overnight.
Oh, I've never checked out books for anyone yet. I'm just doing shelving and recycling.
Oh, well, and I'm sure it's not too difficult.
Well, it probably isn't, Guardian Moo. I just haven't been trained.
So you don't know how to operate the scanner or anything?
No, sir. And Mr. Keating has left for the evening.
So he can't help us either,
No, I'm sorry. I'd like to be of service, but,
how about this? I'll just jot down a list of the books that I want to take out overnight. I'll give you the list, and you can check them off the list when I bring them back in the morning.
Well, I don't know. I don't think I'm supposed to
do anything. You're supposed to help us guardians get our work done. That's what you're supposed to do. I'm sorry. What's your name?
Sandy.
I'm sorry, Sandy. I've just been swamped, and I'm at my wit's end. I've been given 50 more cases to follow, and most of them are young. There are hundreds of autobiographies to study, not to mention the actual client time.
It's just that I'm new here, Guardian.
So you'll be allowed a mistake or two. Oh, I promise I'll bring the books back in the morning.
Well...
Oh, thanks a million. Look, here's the list of titles I'm taking. I've got to get some strong, strong coffee.
You're welcome, I guess.
Here you go. Quadruple tall Americano with room and a double shot of hazelnut.
Thanks.
That's some pile of books. Big test tomorrow?
Well, let's just say I'm way behind in my studies. Now I gotta get at it.
Good luck.
Now, where was I when I left the library? Here we are. Here we are. Kelsey Collins, Autobiography, Delta 72. Oh, these lives are so alike. Go to school, hate parents, fall in love, lose friends, get a cat, or a fish. Thank goodness for coffee. I'd be asleep in an instant. Now, here we go. Kelsey meets Agatha Crump and must decide if she's going to make fun of her name or not. The other kids are already teasing poor Agatha. Oh, seriously, who names their kids Agatha these days? And Kelsey must decide to join in or stand up for Agatha. Okay, well, that's going to happen tomorrow, right after history class. It'll be easier for her to join the teasing. Now, it would seriously reduce her courage when she'll really need it. What can I do to nudge her in the right direction? I can't do this tonight. This coffee's not helping a bit. Let's see, Jim Booth won't have to decide about letting his best friend join in his band until Saturday. Nance O'Neill, she won't have to decide about drama class till Friday. I got all morning to figure out something for Kelsey. I gotta get some sleep. I'll look at these again in the morning and bring them back in the library when it opens. Plenty of time. Plenty of time. Good night, Andrew.
Sir, you dropped one of your books. Well, I'm not running after him. I'll leave it here for the day shift to handle. The Autobiography of Kelsey Collins, version Delta 72? What the heck? Probably one of those sociology studies they do at grad school. Still, none of my business, really. I just leave it for the day shift.
Hey, Marianne. You've got my almond hot chocolate?
Right here. So,
Busy day today?
Nah, just the usual classes. Boring.
I'm sure you'll find something interesting.
Yeah, maybe.
Kelsey, the bus is coming. Hurry up.
Thanks, Marianne. I gotta run.
Oh, Kelsey, you left one of your books.
Oh, okay. Thanks.
Text ahead for your cocoa anytime. Don't be late.
Okay, see you, Marianne. Hey, Bailey, wait up.
You lost a book?
I'm afraid so. I went back to the coffee shop this morning to get it, but the barrister had already given it to someone.
Someone?
Well, not just someone. Marianne gave it to Kelsey Collins.
The subject of the autobiography?
The very same.
Cheese and rice, that's terrible. We are in so much trouble. You've got to go find that book.
Well, I already tried. Look, I can't talk to Kelsey about one of her autobiographies. I'm supposed to remain anonymous. You need to get it from her.
Me? Fine, I'll go. But you'll be the one explaining to Mrs. Bradley if she finds out it's missing.
Oh, she'll find out, all right.
Great. Just great.
Now, you'll have the best chance of catching up with Kelsey at that coffee shop on Main Street, Magic Beans. She's there a lot.
Okay. You'll cover for me if anyone asks where I am.
Sure. I'll tell them you're looking for a book.
Oh, yeah. Whatever. Well, so wait. At least tell me what she looks like.
Kelsey!
Over here.
What are you doing all hunched over in the corner, Kel?
Reading.
Oh, yeah. You've got a dog of Flanders for English class. A real tearjerker.
No, that's not it. I mean, this isn't that book. This book is... Well, this book is really weird.
What's weird about a book?
It's a book about me.
Oh, am I in it?
Well, yeah, you're my best friend. Of course you're in it.
So, you wrote a book about yourself. Oh, I get it. It's your diary. You really almost had me, Kel. I was wondering why it was so thick. Mostly blank pages, right?
No, that's the thing. It appears to be complete.
What? So, it, like, has your future?
Yeah.
Wow, that's so cool. You don't have to worry about what's going to happen to you now. You just have to read the book.
Yeah, I just have to read the book. But, Bailey...
Oh, wow. Do you get into Princeton?
No.
Oh, that sucks. Is that why you're looking so down?
Well, I was reading about today and what just happened. I was with some other kids coming out of history class, and we saw Agatha Crumb, the new kid.
Yeah, what a lousy name, huh? I'd never do that to my kid.
Yeah, I know, right? But the point is, I joined in with the other kids making fun of her instead of standing up for her. And then she left crying.
Oh, you'd think she'd have tougher skin. She's had that awful name all her life.
Oh, that's not the point.
Okay, so what's the point?
Well, according to this book, my making fun of Agatha was just the beginning. Oh, Bailey, I turn into a bad person, and I start being more and more selfish. Somewhere in here, I can't find it. But somewhere along here, I do something really mean to you, my best friend.
Kel, it's just a book. Okay, it's a weird book, but none of it's happened yet. It doesn't mean it's right or that any of it needs to happen.
Yeah, but it's been right so far, exactly right.
Okay, I wonder. What happens next in this book? Find out, and then do something else.
Oh, I don't know. Well, the next thing the book mentions is my running for Junior State of America.
Then don't run. See what happens.
But I want to run.
Oh, right. What else is coming up?
Tennis team tryouts.
Well, then.
But I want to be on the tennis team.
Okay. What's next?
Jazz band.
I know, you want to be in jazz band. Ooh, this is going to be harder than I thought. Okay, what's next?
Here you go, Kelsey. One almond hot cocoa.
Thanks, Marianne.
What's going on, Kelsey? You seem really, well, not your usual happy self.
Nothing.
If you say so. I guess some days are like that.
Yeah, my whole life.
It can't be that bad.
No, you wouldn't understand.
Sure, you're right. It's been a whole decade since I was your age.
No, that's not what I meant. It's just... I don't know. I've just got stuff to think about, that's all.
Sure, Kelsey. It's okay. Let me know if you need anything. Be right with you!
Oh, I just wish I'd never even read this book. It's like I can't change anything, and I'm going to turn into a horrible person. And then I'm going to marry an orthodontist named Clive who hates dogs, just so I can have some security to go to grad school. And I love dogs. Somebody just shoot me.
Excuse me, Kelsey. I'm Sandy. I'm a librarian's aide, and I think you found one of my books.
One of your books?
Well, not mine personally. The book belongs to the library. In fact, I believe that's the one right there.
But this is a book about me.
Well, and so is this one. And this one.
Well, why do you have three books about me? I mean, that's really creepy.
Kelsey, the library actually has over 900 books about you.
900?
Give or take. And each one is different.
I don't understand.
No, not many people do. Oh, I am in so much trouble already. It can't get much worse. Okay, Kelsey, let me try to explain. But you have to promise not to tell a soul what I'm about to tell you.
Okay.
Promise? This is really important.
Okay, I promise.
So, I don't know where to start. Let's just say you have a book that reflects the results of an important choice or decision.
Why?
They document important crossroads you face and what happens when you choose one way or the other.
No, I mean, why have the books at all?
Let's just say for now that we have them. And most of my job is pulling the inaccurate books from the shelves.
But how do you know which one is which?
Well, that part is easy. See these red X's? This means that you made a choice that isn't reflected in this particular book. These books aren't true anymore.
Oh, you mean that means I won't marry a dog-hating orthodontist and that I'll get into Princeton?
Not necessarily. It just means that you've made a choice that makes this particular autobiography inaccurate. I can't tell you any details. That's more what the Guardi... very complicated.
What's a Guardi?
Just a technical librarian term. What is important is that you were never supposed to have seen the book you found, and I have to take it back.
But it's kind of my book, isn't it? I mean, it's about me.
Yes, it's about you, but it's not yours. Your having it means you might get information you shouldn't have, at least not right now.
But it could help me, right? I mean, help me make good choices, right?
Yes and no. Look, I'm way over my head here. It'd be way simpler for both of us if you just give me the book. I have to bring it back to the library.
But you're just going to recycle it anyway. I mean, what difference would it make if I kept it?
Please, Kelsey. You know way more than you were ever supposed to know already, and I'm in so much trouble. I don't know what Mrs. Bradley will do if I don't get the book back.
Mrs. Bradley?
Yeah, my boss, the head librarian for our branch.
Well, I don't want you to get in trouble, Sandy, really. But at the same time, I'd really like to finish reading this book.
Kelsey, you're supposed to live the book, not read it. Well, not that book in particular. It's got a red X, but... Oh, I'm just confusing myself. Can I just have the book back, please?
But I want to read it. Can I just give it back to you tomorrow?
Oh, man! I can't say yes to that, Kelsey. I'm just a librarian's aide, third class.
Well, how about this? How about you meet me back here in 2 hours, and I'll read it as far as I can and give you back the book in 2 hours.
Oh, okay, I guess. 2 hours. Swear to me that you'll give me the book back in 2 hours.
I promise, Sandy.
Guardian Moo? What are you doing here? I'm supposed to meet Kelsey here in a few minutes. So what's with the crystal ball?
I'm doing my job, Miss Shore. I need to counsel Kelsey. For some odd reason, there are 3 shelves of new autobiographies for her. Mrs. Bradley wants to know why.
More books? Oh, I thought they got fewer as time goes by.
Exactly the problem. Something important has happened, something that hadn't been in her previous books. You did get the book back, didn't you?
Oh, not exactly. But that's why I'm meeting her. She's bringing me the book.
Okay. Now sit there with your back to me. That way she won't see you right away. You can listen in while I try to figure out what's going on.
Sure. But why are you dressed like a fortune teller?
Well, I had to come up with something quick, something to get her attention. Oh, please, Annie, go sit. I'll tell you more later.
All right.
Oh, quick, here she comes. Scram!
I'm going!
So you just photocopied the book?
Well, you know I'm not a super fast reader, Bailey. I'd never be able to finish the whole thing in 2 hours. So I just went to the copy place down the street, and voila.
You're going to give the book back to her, right?
Well, of course. I promised.
Kelsey, look. A fortune teller. You should get a second opinion about your biography.
You've got to be kidding.
No, it'd be fun. Come on. You can ask about Clive. Excuse me, sir. How much do you charge to tell a fortune?
For you two young ladies, I'll ask only for a refill on my coffee.
Oh, refills are free. What have we got to lose?
Okay.
Okay, which one of you wants to go first?
You go first, Cal.
Okay, but what do I do?
Well, you just relax and look into the crystal ball. I will see your thoughts and questions in the ball, and if fortune smiles on you, perhaps I will see answers and guidance.
Okay.
Very good. Focus all your attention on the crystal. Look deeper and see images taking shape.
Mm-hmm.
I see teeth. Many teeth. Tightly wrapped in wire and shiny metal. They are not happy. But these are not your teeth. No. But you are drawn to... No, wait. I see a great mound of wire-bound teeth. And you, I see you sitting atop this mound. But what are you doing? One moment. You're trying to read a book. You are uncomfortable. You squirm about. You are unable to concentrate. The teeth are biting...
Clive!
I would have said something else, Cal.
Shh. Does this mean I have to marry Clive?
That is your choice, Kelsey. The crystal only shows your deepest thoughts, your concerns, your hopes, your worries. The crystal sees all. Nothing is hidden. Look deeper into the crystal.
I just see squiggles in the glass.
Oh, for goodness sake, Moo. We already heard that she made a copy of the book.
Sandy? You know this fortune teller?
Yeah, this fortune teller is my co-worker at the library.
Sandy, you blew my cover. You're not supposed to blow my cover.
You're supposed to get the book back, Moo. And it would appear the copy you made of the book, Kelsey.
Well, I said I'd bring the book back, and look, here it is. You didn't say I couldn't make a copy.
Are you thinking of being a lawyer, Kelsey? Look, you were never supposed to have seen the book, much less read it or kept a copy. You need to give them both back to me.
But then how will I know what's the best way to get what I want?
Like I said before, you're supposed to live your life, not read it like you were following a recipe.
You'll have help with your choices, Kelsey.
Yeah, from the most unexpected places.
Exactly. Follow the advice your true self gives you. And you don't need to be tricky or give up what you truly want.
I suppose.
You suppose right. And now, for your next important life choice... Give me the copy you made.
Miss Shore, Guardian Moo.
No, please remain standing. I will be brief.
I can explain, Miss Bradley. My caseload was...
You don't need to explain, Guardian. I know what happened. You lost the book.
Oh, Mrs. Bradley, what happened was so simple, I can...
Not only did you lose a book, but the book ended up in the possession of the very client whose biography it was.
Yes, I know. It's not that I didn't want
it. It's most serious offense, Moo. That's what it is. And you, Miss Shore, While your orientation didn't specifically forbid you from letting guardians take books out of the library, neither did your job description include that task among your duties.
Yes, ma'am.
But that was my fault, Mrs. Bradley. I cajoled her into letting me have the books.
I am well aware whose fault it is, Moo. Considering your otherwise sterling record with the library, Moo, and Miss Shore's inexperience, I have decided some leniency is warranted. However, it must never happen again.
Oh, no! Never, Mrs. Bradley.
And Miss Shore, your resourcefulness in the field and the successful recovery of the book and the copy has restored the Kelsey Collins inventory to its appropriate level. This is worthy of reward. I hereby give you a probationary promotion to Librarian's Aid Second Class.
Thank you, Mrs. Bradley.
You're quite welcome. Now off with the two of you. With all these shenanigans, you're both way behind in your work.
American Radio Theater strongly encourages you to be very, very careful before you choose to open a book. We cannot be held responsible for what you may discover about yourself. You've been listening to American Radio Theater's original production of The Librarian's Aid, written by Kay Lutz and directed by Linda Rasmussen. Laura Linlar played Sandy Shore, with special guests Beverly Washburn as Kelsey Collins and Ivan Curry as Guardian Mew. Also in our cast, you heard Missy Carl, Aaron Hiles, Pam Hungate, Susie Hutchison, Anne-Marie Mara, Mary Moore Campagna, and Randy White. Original music composed and performed by Chad Rennie. Live sound effects by Joy Jackson, David Maddox, and Penny Swanberg. Sound engineering by Doug Collins. I'm your announcer, John Greenway, thanking you for listening and inviting you to join us again next time. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
My next show is from the old-time radio series Quiet Please. It's called A Ribbon of Lincoln Green. Robin Hood at Calais in 1940? In Quiet Please, you never know. Here's Greg Porter as Captain Hood in A Ribbon of Lincoln Green.
American Radio Theater brings you a recreation of a lost broadcast of Quiet Please, an outstanding dark fantasy program on the Mutual Broadcasting System from June 1947 through June 1949. Quiet Please was written and directed by Willis Cooper and featured the talents of Ernest Chappell as its host. This is Episode 11, A Ribbon of Lincoln Green. Now, settle back and enjoy this American Radio Theater presentation of Quiet Please.
Quiet Please. Quiet Please.
Quiet Please for tonight, written by Willis Cooper and featuring Greg Porter as Hood, is called A Ribbon of Lincoln Green.
Hood is my name, H-O-O-D, late captain in the King's Royal Rifle Corps, the old 60th, in His Britannic Majesty's Army, civilian now. Civilian ever since June 1940. Oh, I'm an American. There were half a dozen Americans in the KRRC, maybe more. This young fellow, what's his name? Charles Guy Bolt, started the American Veterans Committee, didn't he? He was in the Rifles, from Connecticut. There were quite a few of us. Well, there is a kind of reason, I suppose. The name of the regiment, when it was organized in 1755, was the Royal American Regiment. They changed that name when the Revolution started, and in 1830, they changed the name to the King's Royal Rifle Corps. So I guess a few of us Americans that joined it had some kind of, you know, sentimental idea in the backs of our heads about being in an American regiment in the British Army before our own country got into the war. I was young and full of stuff back in 1939 when I first joined up at Winchester, at the Rifle Depot. They were kind of tickled at having an American in the outfit, even though I was only second-generation American, and they saw to it right away that I went to officers' training school. So I got my commission early, and I was in France as a very junior captain when the phony war ended and the shooting war started. Time flies. That was 7 and more years ago. May 1940. Everybody knows about Dunkirk and how the British Army got away to England. A lot of people have forgotten about Calais. We were at Calais. We had some others, and quite a lot of Germans. They say that if the Rifles hadn't made a last stand there at the Calais Citadel, the rest of our people wouldn't have got off at Dunkirk. It's probably true. But it wasn't just the Rifles that did the standing off. We had help. That's what I wanted to tell you about. We had a pretty rough time. A lot of good people killed. And finally, Jerry captured the lot of us. One-eyed Major Lord Cromwell, that big tall baronet with the glasses, what was his name? Lieutenant Hawley. Little Jewish Captain Monaco from London. There was a boy. Baldy Gilliatt. A lot of good Joes that fought till they didn't have anything left to fight with and got snaffled by Jerry. Me? I got lost. You ever been in a battle? Well, I suppose battles are different. I've only seen this one at Calais, and it was plenty. I'm not going to try to give you a blow-by-blow description of it, because, after all, I didn't see much of it. But what I did see, it's very much like one of those dreams. You're looking out of a window at a house burning and people running out of it. And all of a sudden you're looking at a guy you ought to know lying on the ground in front of you, and he's saying, "I haven't got change for a shilling, old man," or something just as silly. And you look again, and there's a bridge, and a German on a motorcycle, and then there's a bell ringing somewhere, and then you're running from something, and you hear people shouting, and you'd swear it's your voice, and it is, and there's the loudest noise you ever heard in all your life. You struggle to your feet in the dark, and you start to get out of that place, and then there's the grandfather of all noises.
Captain Hood! Captain Hood!
I can hear somebody calling me.
Captain Hood! I know he's about here somewhere, but I can't find him in the dark.
Can't you light a torch?
Can't have light here. Captain Hood!
I try to raise myself, but it's too much. I try to answer, but I have no voice.
Captain Hood!
That was a woman's voice.
Captain Hood!
What is a woman doing here in the ruins of Calais on this 26th day of May in 1940?
Captain Hood!
Or is this Calais? Is this... I was dreaming.
Captain Hood!
I'll turn over and go to sleep again. I was dreaming about Calais, and Colonel Hoskins was killed. I'll be all right when I wake up. It's so dark.
Captain Hood!
It is a woman's voice. Well, if they want me, let them come and find me. I'm sleepy.
Captain Hood!
I won't answer. I want to go back to sleep. What was that? My God, that was a gun. That was a shell or something. I wasn't dreaming.
Where are you, Captain Hood?
Who the devil are you?
Marion! Here, Marion. I found him.
Who are you?
Oh, why, Captain Hood, good even to you. We thought we lost ye, and we've been prying this place over this long. Where are ye, then, in the dark?
I'm here, and I want to know who you are. Now take it easy. I've got a pistol here.
My Captain, I thought you'd recognize my voice.
Where is he, Alan?
Leastwise, you'll know Marion's voice, Captain.
Marion? Who's Marion? Answer me. Who are you?
Why, Captain, we be the Sherwood Foresters, as ever was. What's wrong with ye? Are thy senses knocked from thy head?
Where, Alan?
Here, lass. Give me thy hand. So, no, mind the fallen stones.
Where is he?
Here, thou'll tread on him. Take care.
My love, my dearest love, we have looked for thee high and low. Oh, and art thou hurt, then?
True, we thought we'd lost thee again for good, Captain.
Dearest, dearest, where is thy hurt? Kiss Marion. Ah, kiss me, love.
I don't know who you are.
Why, love, are thy brains addled, then? 'Tis Marion. Marion, thy own true wife. Kiss me.
No, friend. So far as I knew, I had no wife on the 26th of May, 1940. And certainly I had no wife named Marion, speaking with a North Country accent and talking about my being gone from here again. Nor could I understand how the Sherwood Foresters, which is the nickname of the Notts and Derbyshire Regiment, could have come to Calais when I knew from army orders I'd seen that they were not within hundreds of miles of us that night. And this Alan, who traveled with her, who was he? I asked about my own people, the King's Royal Rifles, and they were vague about them. I asked what we were to do alone there in the ruins of the Citadel, and Alan spat into the darkness and gave me his answer.
Well, Captain, I'm not sure I know. We heard, as you know, that the English was in a strait here, being surrounded by the enemy on all sides except the sea, and we was to come and see what we could do to help.
And we mustered the Foresters, and we come, love.
Aye, so we did. And so here we are, but it's quiet. And, Captain, have the English won, then?
I don't know, my friend.
Where did they go?
I don't know.
Hold my hand, love. I'm feared in the dark.
What are you two doing alone here?
Why, I said we was looking for you, Captain, Marion and me.
Where are the rest of the Foresters?
Prowling the streets, Captain, looking for the enemy in the dark.
How many men do you have?
Why, thou knowest, Captain. There are 33 of us.
33 men? What do you expect to do with them?
Why, Captain, we're the Foresters of Sherwood.
Aye, Captain Love.
And are you in command of them?
Why, thou knows I'm not, Captain.
No? Well, who is, then?
Captain, art thou sure that's not been knocked silly by that giant bomb?
What?
Why, who's ever in command by thy good self, Captain Hood?
I said to myself, Hood, you have been knocked silly by that giant bomb. I said, Hood, either you have been knocked silly, or you're dreaming, or maybe you're dead. I said, look, Hood, only a few minutes ago the German planes were diving on this place, and the German shells were smashing into the parapet where Captain Bauer and Lieutenant Scott and Colonel Hoskins and I were standing. Only a few moments ago the German armor was coming across the bridge down there, and there was a corporal with a Lewis gun standing up by that corner of the Citadel firing at them. You saw him die, I said, and now you're sitting here, and there's not a sound anywhere except the voices of two strange people, one of whom says she's your wife. What is this, Hood? I asked myself. Are you silly, or are you dreaming, or are you dead? That man said, I am in command of the Sherwood Foresters. I am in command of the Sherwood Foresters. I heard him.
Why, who's ever in command but thy good self, Captain Hood?
And slowly, idiotically, a thought forms in my mind. My name is Hood. Do you know what my first name is? Although I am 6 feet two and I weighed 210 back in 1940, my friends in the regiment called me Bobby. Bobby Hood. My name's Robert. My mother had another nickname for me when I was a kid, and there in the blackness of the ruined citadel in Calais with these two people I could not see, I remembered something. I remembered some names. Marion. Alan. I remembered some others. And I wondered what would happen if I tried something. I'd find out whether I was dead, silly, or dreaming. I felt foolish, though, at first when I spoke, in the dark. I said, Alan.
Hey, Captain.
Alan, where's Friar Tuck?
Who?
I felt more than foolish, but I repeated the name. Friar Tuck.
Oh, Tuck. He's likely in some cellar, Captain, seeking wine.
I tried to keep my voice steady. Marion, I said, have you seen Will Scarlet?
Will and Little John and the miller bide on the parapet, watching, Robin.
Robin. Robin Hood. Robin was the nickname my mother had for me. And Marion. Maid Marion, beloved of Robin Hood, dressed in the Lincoln green of the company that ranged Sherwood Forest 800 years ago. Alan Adale, the northern minstrel, who played the harp at Robin Hood's wedding while Sheriff of Nottingham lay in wait to take the wedding party and rid the forest of the man who shot the king's own deer at their pleasure. Do you remember what we did to him, Alan? I said.
Did to who, Captain?
Why, the sheriff, the High Sheriff of Nottingham, Alan.
Aye, and he was a rueful man, wasn't he?
Long dead these 800 years.
Dead? Why, the Sheriff of Nottingham's not dead, Captain.
What?
Latterly, he's become a better man, Captain.
Aye, and didn't he come boldly into the forest only yesternight and say he, too, had heard Englishmen were in peril, and he'd join us to the rescue?
Aye, Robin, England hath need of all her men this day. The good and the bad alike, and what Englishman, though he be ranger or high sheriff, shall bide at home at such a time?
Aye, so 'twill ever be. Let no Englishman despair, dear love, in time of need, for we who love her will be ready at her call.
Marion! 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 Alan! Where are you?
Stop where you are, or I'll fire.
Who are you?
Stand still, I tell you. Who are you?
I'm Captain Hood, King's Royal Rifles.
Come this way so I can have a look at you. Come on.
Where'd they go?
Where did who go? Stop there now.
I was talking to them.
Let me get this torch on you. Oh, you're a British officer?
I told you I'm out of the KRRC.
Who are you yelling at?
There was a man and a woman.
You dotty old chap.
I tell you, who are you?
Forsyth, Major, 1st Battalion. By George, I know you. You are Hood, the American.
I certainly am. I think I know you, too.
Well, we're all that's left, I think. Hood?
What?
The others cleared out to take up another position. What are you doing here?
Knocked out by a shell.
I've got a leg bunged up a bit. Can't move much. I say, what was that rot you were talking about a woman in here?
I guess I got smacked harder than I thought.
Ah, Dottie, eh? All right now?
Yes, I'm all right.
I say, you hear anything?
Wait. Motors.
German armor.
Couldn't be our people?
Not a chance.
We better get out of here.
I can't go.
Well, maybe I could carry you.
No good, old chap. Not with this leg.
Let's have the light. I see what you mean.
You'd better hop it, hadn't you? This time the Jerrys will be coming through, you know.
No, I'll stay. Maybe.
What about these people you said were here?
Well, I was thinking about them.
Well, who were they?
They were our people.
Well, then they and the two of us are all that's left.
I know.
They're trying to get the rest of the army off down at Dunkirk. A mess, isn't it?
Right.
And if we can't hold Jerry here, it'll be too bad for the rest of our people down there.
Yes.
Well, old chap, I don't know where your people have gone. Didn't you say a woman?
Did I?
Well, thought you did. No matter, though. Look, it'd be a bad thing if we didn't do what we could towards stopping the blighters, wouldn't it?
Well, I've got a pistol with, I think, 5 rounds.
Well, there's a Bren gun over in that window, or there was. Think you could drag me over there?
Well,
might get in a lucky shot or two, you know. Dad'll do much good, but we might accidentally pop off a tank driver and hold them up a little while. Suppose every second counts down there at Dunkirk.
Well, we can try, Major.
Good. They're getting closer. Just drag me, I think. It was. Oh, sorry to be so much trouble.
I isn't going
to
do that leg much good.
I suppose not. But it isn't much good anyway. Lost a lot of blood, I'm afraid.
Get your arms around my neck.
Better hurry if we're to do any good. Blast it dark in here, isn't it?
They'll make it light enough if they spot us.
Oh, quite. Easy now. There. Oh, good. Here they come.
Look at them. Got lights and everything.
Oh, of course. They know they've got us. Arrogant beggars. Well, we shall see, eh?
Yeah, here they come. Motorcyclists.
We could pop them off, couldn't we?
We'd better save our ammunition for more profitable targets.
Ah, of course, old man. Hello, what's this?
What?
The cyclists. There's another... somebody's shooting at them.
But who?
But there's more of us here, old boy. Look, there goes another off his cycle. Good chaps! And another. I say, though, I don't hear any shooting.
Neither do I.
Could it be the people who are with you, do you suppose?
I don't know.
Ready, good shooting. Jerry stopped. Look, man, look, they're knocking him over like 9 pins. Who's doing that?
I know who it is.
They stopped. Oh, no, here comes the tanks. Now for it. Look, Hood, look. Hood, do you see what I see? Look, man.
And as the searchlights on the noses of the German tanks crept slowly around the ruined buildings at the edge of the bridge, I saw. Out from the shadows beneath us, out from the shelter of the smashed citadel walls, came a figure. The glare from the light on the leading tank shone full on him, and he was dressed in Lincoln green. The light picked out every detail of the man. I could see the feather in his cap. I saw the great longbow in his left hand. I saw the quiver of clothyard arrows slung across his back. A shooting glove was on his right hand, a bracer on his left wrist, and he grinned up at us as he reached over his shoulder and drew an arrow. He planted his feet wide apart, thrust out the great bow, and I heard his shout,
"Ho, the Sherwood Foresters!"
as he drew the pile of the arrow to his ear and loosed the string. And the arrow, silver in the brilliant light, flew straight to the turret of the tank. And the tank simply disappeared in a cloud of orange flame and smoke. And then the snout of another tank moved forward through the dust and smoke, its guns blazing, and behind the lone archer there came a line of other men in Lincoln green with their 7-foot bows. There was a huge man, 7 feet tall or more, and thin as a rail, and I saw Little John. And one tore at a monk's brown robe and flung it on the ground, and Friar Tuck took his place in the line. And Allan a Dale, with his little harp banging against his shoulders. The miller, who leaned his long quarterstaff against a fallen block of stone. 33 men of the foresters of Sherwood, opposing their cloth-yard arrows against the might of German armor. And the street below and the bridge was filled with smoke and flame and the silver streaks of arrows, and from the window above, Forsyth and I shouted with the foresters and fired our puny weapons at the enemy below. And then, as the tanks started to retreat back the way they had come, the line of men in Lincoln green pressed forward, and some tank gunner below at last saw the flashes of our Bren gun from the window above him.
Hood. I say, Hood.
What?
You saw it, didn't you?
I saw it. Are you all right?
Afraid not, old boy. Did we see that?
Aye, you saw it, friend.
Who's that?
Marion.
Aye, Robin, love. They're gone. They're in me now, for a while.
I saw it.
Who are you, friend?
Oh, why, Maid Marion, I'm afraid I'm a dying Englishman, my dear.
Aye, I'm afraid thou art, friend.
It was a good fight.
Aye. Hold, friend. Have I not seen thy face before?
Why, not my face, lass. But it could be thou's seen a face like mine once.
Who art thou, then?
Why, Marion. Robin and his men have played many a trick up on an elder forebear of mine in the forest of Sherwood.
Who art thou?
And now, tonight, the band of outlaws from the Greenwood hath played a merry trick upon his so many times removed grandson.
Who?
Remember thy wedding, Marion, and him that laid in wait to take you?
The Sheriff of Nottingham.
Who else? I am 13th in line from him, so small world, Hood? Hood, old boy, Robin?
So it was that I fought with the Sherwood Foresters, who called me their captain. So I fought with another Englishman, who died and was the only other man in the world to see it, and can never help me prove what I saw that night in Calais.
After Forsyth died, I lay there for a while in the darkness.
It was quiet again, and the only light there was came from the smoldering German tanks on the bridge below. And Marion held my hand in the dark, and we didn't speak. And when, after a long time, I had my thoughts arranged, somehow I asked her a question. Marion, I said, Marion, what comes after this? I had only vaguely heard the German airplane that, attracted by the fires below, had come closer to investigate. I said again, Marion, what do we do now? And she started to answer me.
Why, Robin, thou knowest...
When I awoke this time, there was no light. It was black everywhere. And I could hear a new sound. It took me quite a while to decide what the sound was. It was waves on a beach. I was lying on the sand. I was alone. I thought I was alone. And then I heard Allan a Dale.
Captain. Captain Hood.
Allan.
Yes, Captain.
Where's Marion?
Marion.
I'm here, dear love.
Never leave me, Marion.
Captain, we've got to go now.
No.
Aye, Captain, but we'll be back for you.
Marion, stay here.
No, my love. I must go with the band.
You'll come back.
We'll come back, Robin.
You see, Captain, there's more of these people to fight, so as our people can get off the beach down there, and we must hurry away.
All right.
We'll leave your weapons with you, Captain. Again, they come against you ere we come back.
But we'll come back, dear love. We'll come back for you.
Marion. Marion.
You would not have us fail England, Captain.
Marion! No, they didn't come back. Or if they did, I wasn't there. It was a fisherman from Dover who picked me up on the beach at Calais 2 days after and got me back to England. No, I didn't know anything about it. All I know is they found me there with my weapons. They found me clutching a 7-foot bow and a quiver of clothyard arrows and a ribbon. A ribbon of Lincoln green, such as a young girl might wear in her hair. That's all. You'd like to see them? I would, too. I've never seen them. I'll never see anything in this world again, but I've seen Maid Marian. The last thing I saw before the airplane bomb landed and put my eyes out was Marian, standing in that window in Calais. But maybe I'll see her again. Maybe I'll see her tie this ribbon of Lincoln green in her hair someday. She promised, you know.
You have listened to Quiet, Please, which is written by Willis Cooper.
You've often heard that there are two sides to every story. But our next week's Quiet, Please goes the old saying one better. It's called Three Sides to a Story. And we're very happy to present next week as our guest star something of a family gathering. Claudia Morgan, star of stage, screen, and radio, and who in private life is Mrs. Ernest Chappell. Her father, another famous star whose work you have enjoyed in many a Hollywood picture and Broadway play, Ralph Morgan, will both be with us. It promises to be entertaining. We hope you'll listen.
And so, until next week at this time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
You've been listening to an American Radio Theater recreation of a lost episode of Quiet, Please. Episode 11, A Ribbon of Lincoln Green, originally broadcast on August 31, 1947, directed and produced by Joy Jackson. In the original broadcast, Ernest Chappell played Captain Hood. In our cast, you heard Greg Porter as Hood, Dave Leese as Alan, Angela Nguyen as Marion. Chuck Royalty was Forsyth. Additionally, you heard Kim Turner as Ernest Chappell, Dean Moody as Willis Cooper, Dave Leese as the Mutual Announcer, and the music was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. I'm your announcer, Pat McNally. If you enjoyed this show, please visit our podcast page at theamericanradiotheater.org. This is ART, American Radio Theater.
Gee, that's all the time I've got today. Please stop by our website, AmericanRadioTheater.org, for more of our podcasts. We put up a new one every month. Hey, see you next time.